and dragged him across the cellar, up the stairs and out into the open, where he heaved the body into the gutter.
More rotting meat for the gators.
You should have woken me up, Ryan. I could stand my turn.
JB was sitting up, with the remains of a gray blanket around his shoulders. He wasn't wearing his glasses, and there were spots of hectic color on his pale cheekbones. The insect bite was very pronounced on the side of his face, pulling at the edge of his mouth.
Thought you needed a rest. There are enough of us to take care of it.
Not the point, Ryan, you bastard. Cheat me like that again, and you wake up with a big red mouth carved across your fucking throat.
Hey, now you're...
Yeah, what, you stupid prick?
Leave it lie, JB. Just leave it.
Time I can't stand my watch is the time we part company, Carter.
Ryan turned away, seeing the concern on the faces of his friends.
Don't show me your back, Carter!
Very, very slowly, Ryan looked over his shoulder at the armorer, who was holding his Steyr Aug in both hands, pointing it toward him.
I said you wasn't. What did I say, Mildred?
You said you were tired, John.
Tired.
Said you had a headache. Throat felt hot and dry, sort of sweating and icy all the same time. You remember?
JB scratched his nose with the barrel of the pistol. His hands were shaking, his knuckles white. Ryan had a dreadful momentary vision of him squeezing the trigger and blowing away his face. But JB eventually laid the blaster down on the blanket.
That's the way I feel. Why's that? Think I got the muti flu, Mildred?
Could be, John. But it might be some kind of infection introduced by the insect bite. If I had some antibiotic, I'd have you well and up in no time at all.
You should lie down, JB. Lie back and sleep. Feel better soon after a sleep.
Yeah. Sleep. I could use some, I guess.
The armorer stretched out his slim body and lay on the floor, tugging the blankets around himself. Doc moved to help him, arranging the covers with careful, solicitous hands. JB's eyes closed, and he was instantly asleep. Ryan beckoned to the others to join him near the entrance to the cellar, where JB wouldn't be able to overhear them, even if he woke up.
He's getting worse, and fast.
Doc looked at Mildred.
The medical authority in our little group is entirely vested in you, ma'am. What are your thoughts about our poor ailing companion?
I don't know. Not a virus. I think it's something triggered by that damned insect that stung him.
How long before he gets better?
I'm not honestly sure.
A day? 2 days? Longer?
I told you, Ryan, I don't know.
How bad might it be?
I don't know. I don't have any drugs at all.
Dredd said something about a traitor somewhere in the Ville. Harry Stanton, yeah. King of the Underworld, Rita called him. Said he had everything. He might have drugs.
It's serious, Ryan. John Strong, tougher than any man I ever met. But there's diseases and deathlands that come at you, and there's no stopping them. If we're lucky, he'll fight it himself and be better in maybe 36 hours.
And if we're not lucky?
I'd rather not say.
Well, wait a minute, but JB seemed better this morning. Had a bitching temper. Didn't look to me like someone ready for a 6 feet of dirt.
I hate to say this, lover, but I sort of feel what Mildred's saying. JB's burning up.
Might I suggest that you, friend Cawdor, and I should go out and about these teeming highways? Perhaps to seek this trader and his world of Hades and obtain drugs to help poor John Barrymore? And also cast a net for news of your lad?
Makes sense, lover.
Ryan looked up the stairs, breathing in the early morning smell of wet stone and clean air.
Not too much choice. JB can't move like he is. If we leave him, he'll need guarding. The more blasters, the better. I like the idea, Doc, but I'll go alone.
Yes. An old man would slow you down and get him away.
It's not like that, Doc. A man alone moves quicker. And that cannon of yours is going to do more good protecting JB in here.
Doc gave a beaming smile, his double row of perfect teeth gleaming like polished ivory.
Very well. And we will not let you down.
You want antibiotics, Ryan. You know what to ask for?
Yeah, penny chilling, right?
John's got a bit of paper in one of his pockets and a stub of pencil. I saw it. I'll write down the names for you.
Just tell me, Mildred. I'll remember them all right. Go on.
Tetracyclines, they'd be good ones to get. Cephalexin, erythromycin, streptomycin, colostin,
All right. I'll go get the paper.
It only took her a couple of minutes, and she gave him the folded piece of paper.
Good luck.
Yes, the very best.
Come back safe, lover.
I'll try. I'll aim to be back here before dusk, but if I don't, put up the door and keep watch.
Ryan climbed up the stairs. Christy was holding the G-12 caseless, watching him.
Ryan?
Yeah, JB?
Keep your back to the sun.
It was an unusual experience for Ryan to be alone. His childhood had been largely a lonely one, often isolated and threatened. Then had come the dark years, when he roamed Deathlands with no friends and very few enemies. Few enemies? Alive. Once he threw in his lot with a traitor, he became part of a team. A highly efficient, superbly trained team. So many of them now dead. Maybe all dead. For a moment, Ryan had a flash of friends killed. In mud, in desert, in rain, in fog, in snow, in light, in dark. So much blood. The traitor always tried to make sure corpses were recovered, and given as decent a burial as was possible. You lived, slept, crapped, and fought with the whole crew in the war wag. The massive old battle wagons the trader had discovered in a hidden cache were lumbering brutes. The conditioning was unreliable, and you often baked in the summer and froze in the winter. Though Ryan also recalled a memorable evening up in the darks with a temperature outside around 50 below, and every vent and obslit wide open while the crew sweated in singlets and pants. Since their first discovery of a redoubt that contained a gateway, Ryan and his companions had been more or less alone, traveling through a largely hostile land, dependent on one another. But now, he was truly on his own. He walked on, looking behind him only once. The rubble-strewn street was deserted, except for the stiff body of the old man, which surprisingly hadn't been dragged away. At the entrance to the cellar, there was the flash of flaming red hair, and he lifted a hand to acknowledge Christy. One of the problems of walking alone through territory like the ruined ville was that you had nobody to watch your back. Ryan was so used to having someone in a skirmishing line behind him that his spine crawled at being so exposed. Though he'd compensated over the years for only having one eye, it was still an undeniable handicap. It halved his peripheral vision, meaning he had to keep on turning his head from side to side. The 9mm Sig Sauer blaster was in its holster, and his fingers itched for the butt. He was aware that his biggest danger came from the gangs of Scalies that seemed to control much of the region to the south and west of him. But from what they knew so far, he hoped the rigid and noisy regimentation of the Muti patrols would allow him sufficient warning. The layout of the streets and the ruined buildings made it classic ambush country. It was impossible at any one time to see more than 70 yards in any direction. And generally, that came down to about 30 yards. The air was cool and damp, with the flavor at the back of the throat of burning wood. Somewhere, not too far away, meat was being roasted and bread being baked. Ryan proceeded cautiously, trying to keep to the sides of the highways, yet not so close to the piled bricks and stone that someone could jump him. He began to see movement. Now and then, in the distance, figures scuttled over the sidewalks and vanished into the urban labyrinth.
Hey, watch out!
Someone was shouting what sounded like a warning, and Ryan checked his stride, moving into the shelter of a demolished storefront. His hand fell to his pistol. Directly across from him, he saw a stout, bald man appear and waddle a few steps into the open, moon-faced, turning to the sky.
You better run, Audie! The birds is coming!
In Deathlands, you didn't live long if you ignored that kind of shout. Ryan flattened himself against the wall, his good eyes scanning the slate sky above him. Others were shouting, and he heard a woman scream a child's name. He remembered a tiny hawk, no bigger than a woman's hand, that had once attacked them with demonic speed and venom. And a condor in the High Sierras, with a wingspan that JB had sworn was better than 50 feet. The mutated inheritors of the rad-polluted Earth had developed in all sorts of bizarre ways. Now he could see them. White bodies with black-capped heads, wings about 6 feet across, and daggered beaks the color of splintered amber. Gulls, five of them. They circled, almost as though they could sense him in the shadows. Then, to Ryan's concern, one of the birds dove toward him, wheeling away at the last moment as he waved his arms at it. In that moment, Ryan noticed that the bird didn't have the usual webbed feet of a fishing gull. It had great claws, bigger than those of a bald-headed eagle. The Sig Sauer was out in his hand, but Ryan realized almost immediately that it wasn't the best weapon to try to hold off a quintet of murderous, fast-moving hunting birds. For a moment, Ryan wished he and Mildred with